Good evening. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I appreciate not only the invitation, but the opportunity to be here for all those that I'm meeting for the first time. I know I see a lot of faces that I recognize from growing up and being back and forth from over in Atlanta, but it's a pleasure to be here, and I really do appreciate it. How awesome it is to be here on Sunday night. And I've always said, for those that never led a song, we were talking about over our congregation the other day, and I was talking to somebody that says, nothing like it. Lead a song, and then, about the second note, it just kind of roars back at you. And so to be here in a full house tonight, it truly is a blessing. And I hope each and every one of you feel the same way. And I was over in Taylor's Crossroads just about, I guess it was back in February now. And for any of you that heard me there, I was using Romans 12. If you want to go ahead and turn there with me, it's Romans 12 and 1 through 2. And I'm just going to use this real quickly as a basis. You're going to get my version of the Star Wars prequel. I'm kind of taking the prequel approach on you today. We're going to kind of take the lead-up approach to something I did at that point. And just real quick, right there in 12 and 1 and 2, it just goes in there talking about what it means to be a living sacrifice. And right there, when Paul's writing to him there, he let out there with, I beseech you, I urge you, I plead with you. And so what I went into looking back then was that, he was asking them to transform themselves, and that was to take on a new form, and that they were to renew their mind. And so I used that to jumpstart a study, and we went through really what it meant to renew our mind, what we were to renew our mind to, what that would look like, and what our ultimate goal was when we were trying to transform ourselves and what it meant. We are trying to transform ourselves into a Christ-like creature each and every day. We're on a path. So we want to proceed towards that goal each and every day so that, why? By renewing our mind, we found out that we could renew our actions. So just by taking, renewing our mind and seeing things in a Christ-like light, and seeing things, or we would react to those things in a more Christ-like manner. So we could truly renew our actions by renewing our mind, therefore transforming ourselves. Okay. Well, so I jump-started there in Romans 12, 1 and 2. What kind of came before that? What leads up to that verse or that passage there in Romans 12? Let's look. And again, I want to focus on this, where it says there. Remember, as we go through this, that Paul is telling the congregation there to, he's beseeching. He is urging them to do this thing, what we just talked about, this transformation, this renewing. So let's see who he was talking to, and let's get some context around that. Jump back, if you would, to Romans 11. And we're going to look at verse 25 for now. I want to kind of single it out. See what the church there was up against. Verse 25 in chapter 11 of Romans. For I would not, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceits, that blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. Okay, so we've got the word mystery here. Jump over to Ephesians with me. Let's look a little bit more of this mystery just to establish exactly what we're talking about here. What is this mystery? And I know many of you probably already know, but this will be good for others as a quick review. Ephesians 3, right here, we're going to look at starting with the first verse. For this cause, I, Paul, the prisoner of Jesus Christ, for you Gentiles, if you have heard of the dispensation of the grace of God, which is given to me to you, how that by revelation he made known unto me the mystery, as I wrote afore in few words, whereby when you read, you may understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ. Okay, so we're seeing this mystery word pop up a couple times here. Which in other ages was not made known unto the sons of men, as it is now revealed unto his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit, that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs and of the same body and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel. Okay, now this mystery, and it just said there, it says it was not made known in former ages, but said it's been revealed at this point. And that's what it's talking about here. So when we look back to, there in Romans, when we were looking at chapter 11, and it was talking, referring back to that mystery, it's exactly what it was. The mystery that the gospel was going to go not only to the Jews, but to the Greeks also. Okay? And it had not been made known in ages leading up to that, but it was being made known at this time, wasn't it? Okay? That's what Paul says. He says, you know, I'm an apostle, you know, I'm here, I'm in charge of taking this gospel out to the Gentiles. So that was, you know, that was his charge. And so here he is, so this mystery. So just keep that in mind. And we'll go back to Romans, just to get a little better definition on this mystery we're looking at. So back to Romans 11. And we'll spend most of our time here now. Okay, so let's get a little bit more. I'm going to take you through just a very brief journey in the book of Romans to lead back up to this spot as we talk about this this Jewish-Gentile interaction here within the church at Rome, the congregation there at Rome. Understand, you know, that in the very lead-off of here in the letter to the Romans, it talks about, Paul's there and says he is addressing, you know, the Jews and Gentiles. You have to understand here what this congregation will be facing. You've got, so this is a, you know, probably a metropolitan city. What happens when you travel, say, to New York or a place like that? What do you find when you go and you start seeing different ethnicities? They kind of stick together in neighborhoods or things like that, right? When you go, you know, you'll always hear Chinatown, different places, whatever. And you see, it's natural to be with the ones that you know, that you have commonality with, that you're familiar with, you know the custom and all that. It's just comfortable, isn't it? Well, what you have here is for the first time, with the gospel going out to Jew and Gentile alike, they finally have something in common that's bringing them together. And, you know, some uncomfortableness or whatever the word might be there comes with that. And so for the first time they're dealing with that. And then Romans, you know, he comes on through, and so you can tell that Paul, in writing this, one of the purposes of this letter is you can kind of see a theme as we build through here, is that, you know, he's exhorting them to live in harmony between the Jews and Gentiles. And he starts off there when, you know, kind of coming through the first three chapters, what's it talk about there? It says, you know, that number one, he said, look, this is for, you know, that I'm not ashamed of the gospel. For this is the power of, sorry, I'm butchering this quote and I'm nervous in front of you. But anyway, he talks about that it's, you know, eventually it's for Jew and Gentile alike. Okay? And so he lays it out there. He's like, look, guys, he's starting to be, you know, kind of equalize, level the playing field. Just to let them know who's who kind of in the group. And so, and not only that, he comes up in chapter 3 where he talks about, you know, he lays it out there, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So you can see, I've heard it, you know, the book of Romans looked at a lot of times as the great equalizer. That's exactly what it was. It says, hey, this gospel is out there for Jew and Gentile alike. Not only that, guess what? You're all sinners. You know, you're all sinners in the eyes of God, okay? Get over yourselves a little bit. And then it goes on. The book of Romans comes up. And this is a very high level, quick look at this. You know, it comes on up. And Romans comes on through and it talks about there, you know, that it is not the works. It is by faith that, you know, that we'll be saved, that we'll have salvation. And, you know, that we are justified and we have reconciliation through Christ. It's not the works. It's not the law. It is that faith. And it goes on to talk about there the idea of adoption. Or being, what did it talk about there when we read about in Ephesians? It said being joint heirs, fellow heirs. Okay, so for generations and generations and generations, the nation of Israel have been the people of God. Now all of a sudden, you've got these people coming together where the gospel is out there for all. And Paul is taking this gospel to them and telling them that not only, you know, can they have this wonderful fellowship together, that they're on a level playing field, is all being... not only being sinners before God, but they have the access to the salvation through Jesus Christ together. But not only that they could have full standing within the family. To be adopted into that royal family and have a full standing so they'd be side by side. And, you know, that not only that you know, it talked about in there that, you know, what comes with that is suffering also. You can be fellow sufferers, but they would have the, you know, you would have that glory together too. And that you could be joint heirs with Christ. So that gets us back
to coming up now to you know what we talked about there in verse 25, where it was talking about that. He said, you know, I don't want you to be ignorant of this mystery, folks. He said, lest you should be wise in your own conceits, that, you know, this little stumble that Israel has had, it had a purpose, okay? That the fact that Israel has turned away and God was displeased, and we're going to read about this in just a second, everything had it was all part of God's plan. That the fullness of the gospel could go out to the Gentiles also. So now let's jump back, if you would, to verse 11 in Romans chapter 11. This will kind of give a little bit more of the full story as we come through this leading up to that chapter 12, where that beseeching, that urging that Paul is writing to the people. Let's start there in verse 11. And again, this is Paul speaking of the nation of Israel. He says, I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? God forbid. But rather through their fall, salvation has come unto the Gentiles, for to provoke them to jealousy. Now if the fall of them be the riches of the world, and the diminishing of them the riches of the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? For I speak to you Gentiles, inasmuch as I am the apostle of the Gentiles, I magnify mine office. If by any means I may provoke to emulation them which are my flesh. Paul was formerly what? He was Saul. You know, so he was a Jewish, you know. That's what he says. He says, with my flesh. He says, I hope by bringing this, you know, it's all part of God's plan, that they had, you know, the nation of Israel had turned away, that they had this, you know, over time, and we'll see this as we go through there, you know, time and time again, they have turned away from God. And so, actually, this is part of God's plan. He says, you know what? He said, I hope by jealousy, by taking this to the Gentiles, they will see what truly they have missed and want to be a part of that again. And that's what he says, I hope to provoke them to jealousy. And he says, so in 14 there, picking up again, if by any means I may provoke to emulation them which are my flesh, and might save some of them. For if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiving of them be but life from the dead? And here we go, this is starting to get into more of where I was going with this lesson. It has a wonderful illustration here of grafting, the grafting process here. And so again, Paul is trying to put this example into terms that they would understand and how this would play out. For if the first fruit be holy, the lump is also holy. And if the root be holy, so are the branches. And if some of the branches be broken off, and thou, being a wild olive tree, okay, keep this in mind, we're going from a wild olive tree, were grafted in among them, and with them partakest of the root and fatness of the olive tree, boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. I'm going to come back and explain some of this too, so I'm just kind of reading through and we'll come back and hit on some highlights here. 19, thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off, and thou standest by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest He also spare not thee. Behold, therefore the goodness and severity of God, of them which fell, severity. But toward thee, goodness. If thou continue in His goodness, otherwise thou also shall be cut off. And they also, if they abide not still in unbelief, shall be grafted in. For God is able to graft them in again. For if thou wert cut off of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and wert grafted contrary to nature into a good olive tree, how much more shall these, which be the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree? Now I know that's a lot of these and thous and everything else, and it gets a little confusing, doesn't it? Let's look at this one. Alright, so in there, again, he's using this illustration because it's something the people would really understand. Okay, they were fully aware of what it meant to graft an olive tree. This was part of their cultivation process, their horticulture process. They would take, this is actually the way it's presented here, and that the wild olive tree, being the Gentiles, were to be grafted in to the root, the base, the established tree, and so it was actually going from the wild olive tree being grafted to the good, or what would be the cultivated olive tree. But actually, when they did this in the fields, they would actually take a good olive tree, the horticultural variety, or the cultivated variety, which had a better fruit. And they would take that, and if you've ever seen pictures, it truly looks like this, a splicing process where they take it, and they'll take this graft from, the good fruit-producing olive tree, the cultivated variety, and they would
to a wild olive tree that normally didn't produce very good fruit. So why did they do that? Well, it's much more efficient. It was much more efficient to lop off the branches of the established olive tree and then graft in, you know, this new limb and let it feed off all the nourishment and everything coming up from established root system. Instead of taking a, you know, a new seedling, going out there and waiting years for this thing to grow to the age that it can produce. And I was reading a little bit about this, and some of you may know more than me, but I just reading into the some of the examples I come across on the internet as far as just literally looking up grafting of olive trees, even in present day. They would talk about the extensive root systems these trees have. And a lot of times they're in regions that must be irrigated. So you're talking about trees that have been there for years and years and years and years. And they, you know, not only that, but they might have to be spaced so far apart to allow for these root systems to gain enough nourishment. So that's what it was taking to feed these good limbs that were coming in. So it was much more efficient, it was much more effective than, you know, having to wait on, you know, like I said, going out there and planting seedlings, just waiting years and years and years for that to take place. Okay, so that's exactly what was happening here, except in this case, the wild fruit, or the wild branches, being the Gentiles, were being grafted into what? An established root. But a root that had been disobedient and turned away. Now he talks about in here, there's always a remnant. There was also always a faithful remnant. But there were so many that were disobedient. And as a general rule, you see, as you read about in the Old Testament over and over, it seems like it was generation to generation or leader to leader, wasn't it? They would follow God and be blessed, or they would turn away and, you know, have all kinds of bad things happen. Okay? And so here it is now, and that's what we're talking about here, that what they're dealing in is that you've got this grafting process, that all of a sudden you've got this merging of cultures, but yet they can be together and survive. I mean, because it doesn't seem right, does it? It actually talks about how it's only God there that can bring these things together and bring forth fruit. And it talks about that as we kind of go through this. Let's look down here and see where... how about verse 17 right here? So what lessons can we take from this? You know, remember he was saying, he told him, he said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, I urge you to live in a certain way, to transform yourself, renew your mind. Why? He wanted them to heed this warning. Listen right here. He said... I'm sorry, I picked the wrong one. Let's see. Yeah, how about 18? You know, it says that, boast not against the branches. And it's kind of speaking here to the wild olive tree of the Gentiles. He said, look, he said, it's not your place to boast. Just because, you know, room was made that you could come in and be grafted in, guess what? We'll read down through here. What did it say? It said, boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root. The root bears you. It's like, you're the limb being grafted in, and this is kind of, again, this is kind of looking at that little, not a power struggle, I hate to use that word, but it's just that kind of maybe awkward mingling of different cultures here. And maybe one was trying to see, you know, maybe the nation of Israel was pulling the old card that they had been there the longest, so they had a little more sway or a little more weight in the congregation, whatever it might be. But they, anyway, like I said, this whole thing was an exhortation to harmony. So it was like, look, number one, you know, he kind of leveled out, well, you're all sinners. But then he talked about it here. He says, look, it's not your place to be boasting against the branches. Just because they were lopped off so that you could be grafted in, don't ever forget, it's their root that supports you. It's that root that's been there all along that has given you your nourishment. And then it comes on down. It says, 19, it says, well, you know, you might say then the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Just what we were talking about that. And it says, what does it say there? It says, well, you know why they were broken off? Because of unbelief. And it says, and thou standest by faith. You know, that's a good thing. It says, but be not high-minded. Don't be cocky. Don't be overconfident. Don't have this, you know, like I said, this high-minded. It's, you know, it should be a mind of, we actually studied this in the lesson I did, you know, how we were put on the mind of Christ, and that's what? A mind of humility, isn't it? And it says, for if God spared not the natural branches, take heed, lest he also spare not thee. Hey, look. He cut off his own people that were disobedient. He's grafting you in. Don't think for a heartbeat he won't lop that branch again. He's not happy about the disobedience. And it says, behold therefore the goodness and the severity of God. Look at this. That, you know,
I don't want to call it duality or dual natures of God or anything. It's just all within His nature. And it's all within His perfect and just nature. But you can see here the goodness in that you've been grafted in. And I don't know about all y'all. I mean, maybe somebody in here has a Jewish lineage, a background that's converted over, whatever. I'm that graft. I'm of the Gentile nation, okay? I'm grafted into this. So it's awesome that it's available to me. And it says there that, behold that goodness. But then also the severity, and that He was willing to lop off those branches so that others could be grafted in. And then it comes on back and it just talks about it. He said, yes, this is the. It's bad that this had to happen, but to understand that this was all part of God's plan. That they were, the nation of Israel, these ones that were disobedient were lopped off so that others could be grafted in. But He said, how awesome would it be? God lopped them off. He said He's ready and willing to pull those branches right back in if only they would listen and obey. And He said, if God had the power to lop them off, He has the power to graft them right back in and let them be nourished by that same root again. Okay, so that takes us into chapter 12 again, where we're reading there. And I'll read it one more time here so you can hear this. And just think about all this that's coming down through here, who He's been speaking to, and given that lesson or that story there, or the illustration of the olive tree. And come on down and think about this now. So He's speaking to the Jewish and Gentile people alike there, the Christians. I'm just, they're, like I said, of the same brotherhood, just of different backgrounds. I beseech you therefore, brethren, again this is verse 1 of chapter 12, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God.
Now, if anything, that verse was as powerful as it was standing alone. But with some extra context of seeing the story behind it, you understand, what is it warning against? He says, guys, I don't want you to be broken off. Okay? I don't want you to be cast away again. How do you not do that? Stay true to it. He said, transform yourself. Renew your mind. What mind did it say not to have? It said, be not high-minded. Mm-mm. He said, renew your mind to be more like Christ's mind. And we went on that study.
I want to read something to you. I came across this article. And it was actually titled... it was titled, State of the Bible 2012. And I don't know if any of you caught this. This was actually on Fox News, on their webpage. And I came across this, and it was an interview with the, I think he's the CEO at, what's the company here? ABS, American Bible Society. And listen to the first sentence here. The good news about the Good Book is that it's still the number one seller of all time, with an estimated 6 billion copies sold. And then it comes on down and it says, the not so good news though, according to a new survey by the American Bible Society, is that it's lost a bit of its prominence in affecting people's lives. And it comes on down here and it gives a couple statistics real quick, and it says that, I think those that had, recognized the Bible as sacred literature had slid by 4 points, down to like 82% from 86. And then it came on down and it says that, there was another like 4 or 5 point slide that... that those that would recognize the Bible as having everything you needed to have a fulfilling life. So that had actually slid a few points. And they said, they came on down and he talks about it there and he said, but you know what? He said, the good news is the Bibles are still there. But look what he said. This I thought this was a kind of a classic line here that quoted from him. He says that, let me find it. He says, this is that CEO of the American Bible Society speaking. He says, there are probably 5 Bibles on every shelf in American homes. He goes, he says, Americans buy the Bibles. He said, they debate the Bible. They love the Bible. They just don't read the Bible. And then he comes on down at the very end of it here. He talks about it. He said, the ABS is not trying to get people to go out and buy new Bibles, just to make good use of the ones they already have. I'm going to read you a quick verse. You don't have to flip with me. We just read through all of this, and we were talking about how, that in God's plan here, it was referring there that, the nation of Israel had this stumble you know, in this fall, and that they were being provoked to jealousy by bringing the Gentiles in hopes of bringing them over, and that they would truly want that relationship with God again, see it, and strive for that. In Romans 10 and 21, it actually says here, and the writer says, "But to Israel he saith, all day long I have stretched forth my hands unto a disobedient and gainsaying people." Okay.
I just talked to you about that, you know, that State of the Bible 2012, and it was talking about how the Bibles are out there. I said, you know, the American family may have five, like I said, on every shelf, but what's happening?
I thought,
you know, it's kind of a lesson learned here. Obviously, Paul was urging that congregation. He was beseeching them to, you know, to transform themselves, renew their mind, to prove that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. He wanted them to carry out God's will in their lives. Why? To avoid being broken off, being cast off. And so it's lesson learned for us. I mean, we look around in our country we live in right now, and you think about the things we're up against, the things we see each and every day, cultural influences, whatever it may be. But what did it say? God said, all day long I've held my hands out to a disobedient people, a disobedient, high-minded people. And it talks about there, it says, he said, they would hear, they just wouldn't obey. What do you think? If we've got 6 billion Bibles in the world, there's a good chance it's being heard. It's just not being obeyed. But you know what? There's always a high point in all of this. Paul talked about the nation of Israel right there being a stumbling block. But he said in there in another passage, I don't have it readily available, he talks about, he said, you know what? He said, there was always a remnant. There was always that faithful remnant that held true. And that's what he said. And that's the root, isn't it? Coming up, there was always that faithful remnant. There was that nice root that was there to support new growth. And he said, and that's what he hoped for, is that those that had been lopped off, that disobedient portion, would come back, would see it in the fullness of God, His full plan, seeing it come together for Jew and Gentile alike, and that they would see it, come back to it, to hear and be obedient instead of hearing but disobedient. It was funny, you know, as we go through this life. I think about it all the time. It's crazy to think about what my kids may face. But it's nice like this. When you come together and you see it. You see the remnant in action. I mean, we read about, we know about the falling away, but you know, the world itself is going to turn away. They'll be hard-hearted. But we're going to have that faithful remnant. And how awesome it is. How wonderful it is. But not only that, though, we have to be just as careful. What did he talk about? Paul said there in Romans 12, to be a living sacrifice. It's not a one-time gig. It's a continuous pattern, life pattern. You know, that it's a path that we walk on day in, day out, striving to do what God wants us to do. To take those 6 billion Bibles that he talked about, you know, to take it and apply it in our lives. Because that's what he wants. He doesn't want just hearers. He wants doers. And that's, you know, that's the beauty of the, you know, of the gospel.
I thought on the way over here, I thought Billy made a good point. My aunt, we were sitting there and I was laughing about it. And we were talking about, I was reading her a couple of those quotes. And I was like, isn't this funny? And she said, you know, she said, but just try to take it away from them. She said, those 6 billion Bibles, you know, you hate to say it, all of them, but say the ones that are sitting up dusty or whatever it is, you know. I said, you try to take that away from them, you would see absolute chaos here. You know? Trying to take their freedoms away, just think if they were that a day, were that passionate about it each and every day, about how much that Bible, that book means to us. Just think what that could mean. I thank you very much for your attention tonight. I thank you that I could be here again. I thank you for the opportunity. I thank you for the invitation. I'll stand here just like Paul. Talking just of myself too, I beseech you and I urge you to go on that wonderful path. It's a great feeling. It's a wonderful feeling of peace to know God and to know that you have salvation through Him, and that He doesn't expect us to be perfect. He expects us to strive for that perfection and just to live through Christ. And so I thank you again. If there be any among us, if the church can help you in any way,
if it's to take that first step, don't think you have to be perfect before you come. That's not the way it works. It's a first step to hear that word, to believe it, to be pricked in your heart and understand that, you know, there's a better way. Jesus dies for me and I want to be a part of it. Please, there's no better time than now. Please come forward. If not, if we can help with prayers, we would be happy to do so also as we stand and sing the selected song.
Come to Jesus, He will save you. Though your sins as crimson glow, if you give your heart to Jesus, He will make them white as snow. Come to Jesus.
Jesus be glory forever and ever. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.